Welcome back to Presentation Thinking, aka the Storyteller Study Club. We've got a very exciting episode today. My name is Mikey Medusky. I'm the founder and CEO of a presentation agency called Ghost Ranch Communications. And we are joined by our co-host, Molly Gagan, narrative strategist, marketing all-star. Molly, tell us what we're doing today.
Whoa. Thanks, Mikey. Yeah, I'm super excited to be here today because I'm always excited to be here, Mikey. But today, my fangirl dreams, my social media fangirling is coming to life here. We have none other than Danielle Barnes, the CEO of Women Talk Design and co-author of upcoming book, Present Yourself. Danielle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. So thank you so much, Mikey and Molly.
Yeah, I have followed. Mikey asked me actually this morning, he's like, how did you learn about Women Talk Design, your organization? And I was like, I don't know. I think it's just been on my social media sphere within presentations and storytelling for maybe about a year, I want to say.
Awesome.
And I just love everything you guys have put out. And I think I LinkedIn messaged one of your, colleagues maybe months ago. And I'm just so happy that finally this came to fruition, that we get to actually meet you. And I feel very honored to get an hour of your time. So excited.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. And I'm excited to dive in with everything we're going to talk about today.
Okay, so we know there's an upcoming book coming out. But first of all, let's back up a few steps. How did Women Talk Design come about? What is it?
Yeah, so Women Talk Design is a social enterprise. And our mission is to amplify the voices of women and non-binary folks. We do that through visibility, through training, and through community. And the mission's evolved a bit over the past couple of years. Christina Woodkey, who's actually my co-author for the Present Yourself book, founded the organization back in 2013 as a speaker directory. She was speaking at a lot of conferences and often found that she was the only woman on stage, which she's pretty pissed off about. She knew a lot of incredible women in the design industry and thought, where are they? Why aren't they on these stages? And so she started just a little blog where she would feature people that she knew in the industry so that event organizers could find them and that there would be no more excuses of why they weren't on stage. Turns out there were more reasons than just organizers weren't asking women to speak. There's a whole story there, but over the years, we've really evolved our mission and are now much broader into trying to encourage more women and non-binary folks and anyone from a historically minoritized group to speak up and share their voice.
Woo! Oh my gosh. Noble mission. Certainly, this is just like a necessary. Any woman presenter we've talked to has always been amazing, but I think we've never really named that overcoming some of these barriers to presentations, and certainly 10 years ago would have been even harder place to tap into. It definitely still has a lot of barriers. So what are some of those big barriers that women and non-binary folks face in getting into the presenting space?
Yeah. One of the things that I realized, I came on board for Women Talk Design in 2017, and that's where I incorporated into a social enterprise and started to expand the mission. And, one of the things that I realized is that the conference stages were kind of like a microcosm to the workplace. And so a lot of the issues that we see that women face in the workplace with pay inequity, with microaggressions and harassment, with being talked over, having their ideas questioned, like those things also showed up in presentations and in the conference stage. And so when it comes to, I think, why there weren't more women on stage speaking, part of it was that they weren't being asked, but part of it was the self-doubt that came from these systemic biases that were happening, of being told that like their ideas aren't valid, or being paid less for a speaking engagement than one of their male counterparts. And so this is actually one of the things that we have started to talk about in Women Talk Design. And ultimately what we've incorporated into the book is that, we want to really recognize that public speaking isn't a level playing field. I think it's gotten better over the years as people become more aware of some of the inequities, but there's still biases and there's still these barriers that women and non-binary folks, and again, anyone who is historically minoritized, will come up against when it comes to speaking. And we don't want that to stop them from speaking, but I also don't want to pretend it doesn't exist, because it does.
And I love, in your manuscript, you say, and Christina, you say right out of the open, here's what we believe: new voices need to be heard. And what is it about conference stages in general? Why do you see this as an important area to capture?
I think the people that we see on stage are the people that we view as leaders. And they're the ideas that get disseminated, right? Someone will be on a stage, they'll be sharing their idea. People are tweeting about it or Xing about it. I don't know what you call it now. There's written up blog posts. These are the ideas that get passed on. And, you know, I think that it's really important that the people we're hearing from aren't just the traditional white, cis, straight male that we've heard from so often. They have great ideas too. But it's just so important for businesses, for our world, that we're hearing from folks of all different backgrounds and identities. And, you know, I think the conference stage is part of that. That's actually how Women in Talk Design started, is that we were really focused on trying to diversify conference stages. But over time, I actually realized this work also applies to any type of presenting. And since we've evolved our curriculum and the work that we do to help folks present, no matter where they are, be it in public or at work, because we all in different capacities need to present at work. And that's really important too, for having your voice and your ideas heard.
Yeah, I love that. People we see on stage are the people we see as leaders. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Women Talk Design starting as like a resource and a hub and kind of like a directory also for people to register themselves as speakers and diversify those stages is now like such a cool resource. And amazing social media follow, as I've said, for people to learn and learn from each other and set up like groups and webinars and workshops. I've seen so much good content come out from you guys. So really cool that the book is slated next. Give us a little, how did this come about? And did you ever see yourself writing a book?
Good question. So Present Yourself actually started as a workshop. It's the very first program we ran. I mentioned Women Talk Design went through this evolution from directory to this greater mission. And the workshop was a key part of that transition point. It came out of actually in 2017, Christina ran a GoFundMe campaign to hire two female design students that she was teaching to go through the design process and look at the Women Talk Design directory and actually do research interviewing event organizers and speakers and see, you know, if what the website was doing was achieving the goal that Christina set out for. And, you know, in all of these learnings that they had, they learned about the biases that women face, but they also learned that, you know, a lot of women didn't feel like they were prepared to share their ideas and their voice. And so we created the very first Present Yourself workshop as a weekend workshop in San Francisco, going from how do you take idea, build it into a presentation and deliver it and do it all on the weekend, which we were told was a very ambitious goal. And it was, but it was also really powerful. And seeing the 5-minute talks that came out of that weekend workshop and hearing from the participants the impact it had on them made us realize we needed to keep doing this. And so we offered the workshop in more cities throughout the US. In 2020, everything went online. And in 2021, we decided to redesign the program as this 8-week hybrid online program that we're still running today. How it turned into a book, Christina actually always talked about it from the beginning. She's written several books and was like, this should be a book. Let's make this a book. And I was like, I'm not a writer. I'm not writing a book. No, thank you. That sounds really hard. And, you know, we got some feedback over the years from people who took the program that they would love an accompanying book. And it was really when we moved the program online and started to create asynchronous modules and started to write out some of the material that I realized, oh, this could be a book, and started the process, I guess, early last year, 2 years ago. I don't know. I'm so confused about like actually pursuing, starting to talk to publishers and figuring out how we were going to turn this into the book. And that's the long answer. The short answer is ultimately I wanted these skills, these lessons to reach more people. We've had hundreds of people take the Present Yourself program over the years, and we've heard the impact that it's had on them. And we wanted to make it accessible to more people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's the book is another entry point, you know, if someone isn't familiar with you, for them to get familiar with the content and those ideas and overcome maybe that imposter syndrome. And it sounds like from the feedback in your workshops, it warranted this needs to be in writing in a binded way. That's really cool. And who would be, you know, if someone's listening, you know, if they like, should I go out and buy this book? Who is the intended kind of audience that the book is geared for?
Yeah. So, you know, so my personal mission is that a woman or a non-binary person or someone who is from a historically minoritized group will read this and think, you know, okay, I need to share my voice. I need to speak up. I have tools so that I can do this. But honestly, anyone who needs to present can benefit from this book. There's a ton of practical tools and tactics, and there's a framework that's really useful. And so I think anyone who needs to present can get a lot of benefit from it. I also hope that, you know, folks who are not from a minoritized group will also read it and learn about some of the barriers and biases that those who are face. But so much of the book is actually really focused on tools and tactics for public speaking in a way that feels right to you.
And Molly and I got a glimpse at like the introduction in the first five chapters, which now we're like, we want more.
So we can't wait to finish this.
And I can say absolutely, not only did I learn already about some of the difficulties that so many people have to get on stage, and then a lot of the self-doubt and things that I've considered like, geez, is this topic, you know, everyone's talked about this before, or am I really an expert? And I think you address a lot of these doubts that people might have that are very common and present ways to get around it, or actually like ways to make sure that you are coming at it in the right direction. So first of all, like I can't wait to read the rest of it. And I'd love to like dig into the book a little bit as far as like some of the highlights that, you know, Molly and I have at least begun. And then maybe you can tell us, you know, what else might be in store a little bit. But
for sure,
I know, first of all, like in it, we already kind of talked about it. I was like, why should someone consider public speaking? And I think your first chapter is about figuring out why someone should in the first place. And it sounds like there's a lot of different whys out there, you know, because it's not always the same for everybody.
There are so many different reasons to speak. There are so many benefits from speaking. I mean, sometimes you have to do it for work. There's also a lot of personal benefits you might have. If you speak publicly, it can be a great way to connect with other people who are interested in the same ideas as you. It's a great way to give back. You've learned a lot of lessons over your career that you might want to share with others. I have some speakers who approach crafting presentations as a way to sit down with their ideas and really start to solidify them and reflect back on what they've learned and be able to continue learning for themselves. So lots of different reasons to speak. And, you know, one of the themes in this book is that there's no one right anything. So there's no one right way to present, but there's also no one right reason of why you should speak. So that's one of the things we really wanted to do in this chapter, is to allow people to explore, yeah, there's lots of different reasons, but what is your reason right now? Because ultimately that's going to help guide you through any public speaking journey that you're on.
And I love that you lay that out right away, where you're asking a lot of questions to kind of tease it out of what someone, maybe they don't even realize, like, why am I kind of interested in this? Or is this like touching a nerve with me? But there really is so many ways and entry points that people can get into public speaking, get into presenting and wanting to share a topic, be it research, a new and original idea, challenge a current idea. Yeah, there's a million reasons why. And so I think it's really inviting. I found it really accessible. And I also want to call out, like with that guide kind of setup that you have for the book, at the end of each chapter, there's a now try section, right? Where you're like, okay, let's get pen to paper, or like open up a Google Doc here and kind of write down a few thoughts. And I really, as a writer at my core, I always like those kind of journaly prompty things. So that really stuck with me too.
I'm glad to hear that. That part was so important to us, because this was something we shared in the introduction. It's like, you can't really get better at public speaking unless you actually do it. And so that was also one of the barriers to, like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of books on public speaking, so public speaking can be in a book. But one of the reasons we love the course so much is it allows you to put into practice what you learned. And so we wanted to add in little bits of that to the book so that, you know, folks who are reading it could actually start to do what we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, if you're sitting there listening and you're like, oh, I'm in the midst of making a new presentation and kind of struggling, this chapter alone, like the five whys method, I loved. And then I did write down this quote that I think it was from you guys, or maybe it was one of your examples, but it says, sometimes when you struggle to design a new presentation, it's because you have no idea why you're making it. So yeah, I just feel validated in some of the previous frameworks Mikey and I have looked at. Why is so often that first step? And I just think it's the most powerful place to start, so it'll inform the rest, you know.
Danielle, you have a couple throughout the book, it seems you'll have a lot of real world examples from speakers that have either worked with you in your course or that you've just, you know, helped contribute to the book. One of the examples in the why chapter is the importance of visibility and representation, and sort of this, the signs of like this virtuous cycle that can actually help. Like when someone sees someone like them up on the stage, it makes them actually feel like maybe I can do this too.
Yeah, that is my guiding why for Women Talk Design. There's actually a story in the book that talks about, it's a fictional story about someone seeing themselves on stage and starting to think, okay, I belong here and I can do this too. And I don't think that has to be everyone's reason, especially for someone, you know, who is from a minoritized identity. Like, I don't want them to feel like they have to put themselves out there if they don't want to, just for the sake of, you know, other people in their community. But it is such a powerful thing for those who that why resonates with them of, oh, yes, I want to be able to inspire other people who look like me, who have a similar background to me, who maybe aren't heard, and who what maybe was someone I didn't see and wish I did. And that's my reason for wanting to speak.
Yeah. Mikey, it reminded me, we broke down Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's TED Talk, The Power of a Single Story or The Danger of a Single Story, right?
So good.
And that's all about that representation where she, a woman from Africa, a Black woman from Africa, doesn't see brown children represented in the children's books that she read and was, you know, so she didn't think characters and stories could be like her, right? So representation does matter in that way. And I think that's just a super powerful place to start. Once we get past the why and you like start getting into the process, one of your main points in chapter two is bringing other people in to that process. Like peeling back the curtain can be a scary, vulnerable thing. But, you know, Mikey and I, we've talked about this a lot too, where there's this opportunity you have to get other people's minds when you're actually building the blocks together. Instead of just coming to them with a finished product and hoping, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best. But why was that chapter so important to put as chapter two, you know, showing the work in progress?
Yeah, my community has always been the heart of Women Talk Design. And I think this was something that was so invaluable from that first Present Yourself workshop, was seeing how people within the program were supporting one another and giving each other feedback or listening to one another or, you know, helping being a sounding board. And so when we were thinking about how we were going to create a book on this, that was one of the key pieces that was missing. Well, the cohort, what's so powerful of this is the community that's there. And so how do we create that in the book? And so we did it through a chapter. We wanted to do it through a chapter early on. And I think oftentimes when people think about preparing for public speaking, it is a very solo activity. It's I'm going to get all of my ducks in a row. I'm going to make sure everything is perfect before I share this with anyone else, because it's vulnerable to share work in progress. You don't want to share your ideas that you haven't thought all the way through and then have someone say, wait, that's a dumb idea, or that doesn't make sense. Like it's hard to put yourself out there in that way. But it's also so important because other people make us more effective. So yeah, that, I mean, I think it's such a key message of the book is to not go at public speaking alone, to bring other people into your process early and often. And there's going to be different people you might need for different parts of the process.
It's kind of a testing and iteration. Yeah, super scary. Mikey and I, we've all had that experience when you press like screen share and you just know you're showing a bunch of placeholders or language or copy that I'm not even happy with yet. And maybe a doodle or something like, oh, it's just... can be really intimidating, but it's a testing opportunity, right, Mikey? Like in Referable Speaker, they talk about iteration, getting other people's brains in, because if you can't test it with other people and see how it'll land and different perspectives, then it'll be hard to gauge when you actually take it to the stage.
Definitely stumbled when I've lived too long in my head. And then when I think it's, oh, this is going to be great. And then I'm trying to actually say it out loud. It's a mess, you know? And I'm like, I should have probably tried to speak this out loud instead of just live in a Word doc the whole time or PowerPoint. So,
it's such a different experience to say something out loud versus to say it in your head. And also, even earlier in the process, when you're trying to figure out what you're going to speak about. So, you know, for someone who maybe wants to speak publicly, but they're not sure what they're going to say. I know, Mikey, you had mentioned like some of the concerns that come up around topics of like, has other people talked about this? Does anyone care about this? I think that is such a valuable place to bring other people in as well. Because I've had this experience with participants of our program who said, you know, I like have these experiences, but like they're not unique or who cares about this? And that's where someone else can come in and say, oh, wait, that thing you said right there, I'm experiencing that too. How did you solve it? Or, oh, that part of your story, I want to hear more about that. And so there's so many different roles that someone can play at different parts of the process. And that's one of the things we outline in that chapter.
Yeah. Building a community. Don't skip the step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I wrote something down too that you both said. I think it's the word expert or expertise is something that you're not in love with. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I think we've heard this. One of the things that have held people back from wanting to share their ideas is that they don't feel like an expert in something. So how can I speak on this topic if I'm not an expert in it? And I think that expert has often been a very gatekeeping term. We point to some research that shows that when someone is being cited as an expert in newspaper articles, like oftentimes it's men and not women, even when they have the same level of expertise, the same level of qualifications, using the term expertise. And so I think expert feels like it's just like a fraught term because who decides what is the expert? Like different fields that you're in have different types of qualifications. And even those have had historically a lot of barriers of who gets to be in that position because of some biases and systemic issues. And so I think that expert is one of those terms that tends to hold people back, but is also when you really dive into it, it's like, okay, well, then who can be an expert and who is actually qualified to share their ideas? And so one of the things that we try to share is that, everyone has something that they can share. And so even if you don't feel like an expert on a topic, it doesn't mean that you can't talk about it. You still have an interest in the topic. You still might have some experience in the topic, and that will inform how you talk about it. But this idea of expertise, that we need to be an expert in order to talk about something, is an idea that I would like to do away with.
And with authenticity as like part of your subtitle too, I think we can tell when it just feels more real when someone's like, hey, I'm not an expert at this, but I really wanted to learn and here's what I've learned so far. And I think there's something about that, like humility to say, here's where I started, here's where I'm at. I think I still have to learn a few things, is also a little more endearing, I think, or like authentic when they're not trying relatable. To pretend that they know everything, and I love that approach as well.
Yeah. I mean, like Molly just said, relatable. I think like sometimes when we're hearing from someone who is a lot more removed in their learning journey on that topic, it's harder to relate to them. It's harder to know like, okay, well, I'm struggling with this problem and you're telling me, this new idea, but I like that doesn't help me where I am right now because that's not where I am right now. And so, not to say that we can't learn from people who are more experienced in their field, but I do think that we don't only need to hear from quote unquote experts. And I also think that we need to redefine what an expert is.
Yeah. And there's power, you say this as well in the book, where it's like there's power in sharing where you're at in the story too. Like you don't have to be at the very end and looking back at the mountain. You could still be like working your way up the mountain, not sure what the summit's going to look like, et cetera, without turning around with a perfect bow on it story, that still can be turned into a story of itself. And I think if it can often be more powerful in that way to just relate to people that might be also on that journey.
I love an unfinished story. That is something that has really stood out to me in the past couple of years, especially early on with Women Talk Design, when I started talking to people who I thought should be speakers, but I didn't see them speaking publicly. I would, ask them like, oh, you're telling me about this amazing project you're working on or this huge initiative you're leading at work. Why don't you talk about that? And the response that I would hear was, well, I haven't finished it yet. Like, I don't have all my lessons learned. There's not a nice bow on it. Like, I can't talk about it yet because I don't have the conclusion. And I think that there's so much power to sharing an unfinished story, be it to let people know that like you're in the messy middle and they might be in the messy middle and they're not alone. I think it can also be an avenue to invite people in to help solve your problems. We really like to solve other people's problems and it's hard to solve our own. And so if you're kind of stuck in this messy middle of your story, that can be a reason to share it. Or, you might share where you are to propose a future of how, like what your conclusion or resolution might be. And so I think that it's important if you are to share an unfinished story to know why you're sharing it. That's going back to your why is always important. But I would like to see more unfinished story.
Agreed. I love a movie that ends that way too. A little like open for interpretation. Leaves you wanting
sequel.
More. Yeah. Yes. Because then, from a professional career standpoint, if you share a story that you're like halfway through a project, then you definitely have a bill ready to go for your second presentation when you finish it and when you look back on it, right? Bringing in your presentation experience a little bit here, Danielle. You mentioned, I believe it's you that said you would prefer to be behind the scenes, and Christina traditionally was the one always going out and speaking, but you have presented quite a bit. And I'm curious what that experience has been like for you with both like picking a topic and also just like getting through nerves. And, you know, I don't know if you identify as an introvert or not, but yeah, any advice you'd have to people who also might identify as a behind the scenes person?
Yeah. It's funny because I think that I'm a little less traditional of like a typical introvert or someone who doesn't want to speak, because anyone who knows me thinks like, oh, you are very extroverted. Like you, I was camp counselor. I was a group exercise instructor. I was a cheerleader growing up. Like I could get in front of a room and, you know, improv.
And yeah,
I don't know that I was comfortable, but I could act comfortable. Right. But I think, you know, my introversion is I like to recharge alone. Like after that, I need to go spend an hour by myself in a room, not talking to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the reason I've always really liked to be behind the scenes, because I wanted to help other people shine. That's, you know, like so much of, I guess, my personal mission in life is to really help amplify people who are doing amazing work. And I, you know, I wanted them to speak and not necessarily be the one who was speaking or sharing, which is funny because I hear a lot of people share that in Women's Tech Design. And then I'm like, no, we need to hear your voice. And I think part of writing this book was me going through that process of, oh, I need to be the hype woman that I'm trying to be for everyone else and say, oh, okay, like I have ideas and experience that I need to share too. So I think that has been what has motivated me to speak, is this like deeper belief that there are things that need to be shared and changes that I want to make that speaking can be a vehicle for. And in terms of my preparation, you know, I think that for me, when I get nervous, I get like really over energized and like everything is kind of running through me. And so a lot of my preparation is actually helping myself calm down rather than, you know, maybe someone is more low energy, like needs to hype themselves up to get excited. I, as much as I like would prefer not necessarily to be in front of a room, I am like super amped up. And so need to dial it back a little bit through, you know, some type of exercise that can get, or like moving my body to get some of those extra nerves out, or doing deep breathing exercises, minimizing caffeine, trying to center myself before I speak rather than trying to necessarily like amp myself up to go out.
Right. I really relate to that. I identify as an extrovert. Mikey and I used to have a whole podcast about demystifying sales, and you know, it's not just like the extroverts game, like everyone can do it. But I think for me as well, as a coffee lover and as a high energy excitable person, I think it's more like zeroing in and calming down instead of like, let's go, like punching the wall, here we go, because I can often have a little bit too much like adrenaline, and I almost in excitement stumble over my words, I speak really fast. Yeah. Mikey, you've been presenting more and more. What's your presentation prep looking like these days?
Yeah. I think, Danielle, you'll have it in the book. One, there's a couple different types of people. Like I said, no two people do it the same way, but I definitely feel like I'm the person who, I don't want to talk to anybody before I have to go up. I feel like I have to be alone and like, but I think I get too internal. So I want to keep practicing as well, because I don't think I figured it out, but I try to, I've been avoiding people, Molly. Like the hours leading up to it, I just pace frantically and, you know, get all sweaty. But
no, definitely.
So that's how I do it.
If I have to have a conversation with someone before, even before coming to the podcast or something, I'm like, I can't hold that. Like, I'm not present in that. You know, I'm like, I got it. My brain is here and I'm ready to transition and focus. It's too tough to hold it all at once.
That is, I know y'all only had a chance to read the beginning part of the book, but the second half of the book, we do have a chapter on preparing yourself.
Okay.
And like, what
Perfect.
Should you do
Perfect.
When you're feeling those nerves? First of all, that those nerves, you're not alone in them. Second of all, that they're going to show up, and Mikey, like you said, they're going to show up differently in different people. And the third piece of it is to get some tools and techniques that you could try out, but figure out what works for you so you can make your own routine. And so, Molly, there are a couple exercises about staying focused and present when there's a lot of things driving your attention.
I need those noise-canceling headphones on, you know?
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought up part two of the book, Danielle, because one thing we definitely wanted to bring in, Mikey and I love a story framework. I felt so excited to see you guys' own story arc doodle. Really resonated with it. But part two is about building a presentation, as you said. And You introduced the CAMP framework. If we could share a little bit about that without, you know, giving it all away so people can tune in. Yeah. What is the CAMP framework?
Yeah, of course. So one of the many amazing things about Christina, my co-author and the founder of Women Talk Design, is that she thinks in frameworks. And thankfully for all of us, she shared these frameworks as well. And so actually years ago, she published an article called A Theory for Designing Just About Anything. Christina has a design background, and this framework is called CAMP. And we have been using it, you know, since we ran our first Present Yourself workshop to teach how to craft a presentation. And so that is a central part of this book. And one of the things I really love about CAMP, I'm happy to share like what it all stands for, is that it is a framework that allows flexibility for you to still create your own way. And that's one of the things we really want to emphasize in this book is like, it's not prescriptive. It's not, you must do this. And like, this is how a presentation should look. It's more about, you know, providing a way of exploring, you know, how you might create your own presentations. And so CAMP stands for Context, Architecture, Mechanics, and Poetics. And we go into much more detail of this with the book, but just from a high level, it's about, you know, before you even start crafting a presentation, really thinking about the context of the constraints. It's who you're designing the presentation for, what your goals are, what's the format, understanding all the elements that are going to affect your presentation before you, you know, might just open up PowerPoint or even start creating your outline, like getting really clear on your goals and who this is for and how that's going to influence your presentation. And then A is for architecture. That's when you get to start to think about, okay, well, what is the shape of my presentation? What are the elements that I'm putting in? This is where we talk about story a lot, which is so key to effective presentations. M is for mechanics. And these are the tools and techniques that you can use to really engage your audience and create the experience that you want to. And so there's a lot involved with mechanics. There is narrative mechanics, which includes things like humor or foreshadowing or using pauses. There is visual mechanics. So this is when we start to think about slides or props or any type of visuals you might use. And then finally, delivery mechanics. So this is you as a speaker, how you're creating the experience of your talk by how you show up. And then finally, P is for poetics. And this is ultimately the experience that you're hoping to create for your audience. So CAM is building up to this P. It's ultimately like how you want your audience to feel during your presentation and what is the change that you want to create in them. And so it comes at the end because you're designing toward it, but ultimately something you want to think about early on. So when we introduce kind of a deeper dive in the book, we pair context and poetics together because you want to think about your poetics early, even though it's something that comes at the end of the framework.
Would that include potentially like that one key takeaway? Like, what do you want the audience to feel and then walk away remembering like the overall feeling and thought that they had when they saw you up on stage?
Yeah, we talk about hands, head, and heart. So that think, feel, and do. Like, what do you want your audience to think after your presentation? What do you want them to feel? And what do you want them to do?
Oh, cool. I love that.
You mentioned how story is so important in effective presentations. And if you look up like storytelling on Amazon, I feel like there's a billion different, you know, books on this topic. What's your take on story and why is it so important?
It's funny because in our workshops, when I've asked people why story is important, it's never silent. Like, people always have an answer to why storytelling is important. It's engaging. It's how we connect with one another. It helps things come to life. I find that a lot of people know that storytelling is powerful. It's that step of, okay, how do you actually incorporate them into presentations? That can be really challenging, especially business presentations, because we talk about both presenting externally, but also internally at work. And I think that latter one is really difficult for folks when it comes to storytelling. What I really love is that in the book, in addition to saying like, storytelling is important for all those reasons, we actually point to some research that a man named Kendall Heaven has done and talked about to show the science of story. And it's not like, okay, it's not just that we all inherently know that story is important, but our brain actually responds to story. And Kendall Heaven partnered with 47 neuroscientists, got a grant from the US government to do this research to figure out how our brains actually respond to story. And it affects all kinds of things, oxytocin and dopamine. And there's science that shows that it helps us connect. It helps us understand. It helps us remember. Storytelling is just so powerful. And what we hope to break down is how to actually use it in your presentation.
I love that section so much. And I'm like, I feel like we could do a whole nother podcast talking about that science piece of the science of story. I wrote down the quote, you know, we're hardwired to make sense of the world in story terms, because anytime we hear like a new piece of information, we associate some kind of story with it and it'll stick better. I love the Kendall Haven research, and I loved Christina's previous experience writing a book on, you know, objectives and key results, kind of an objectively like unsexy or unmemorable thing to talk about, and hanging a story around that. And that's how she made her book Success and how it all pulled together. And I just thought that was a brilliant way to bring in story and talk about the importance of it. The micro story suggestions you guys have too, like if you're finding that you might not even have a personal story to share in your presentation, because I think a lot of people are like, well, I was out at the park the other day, you know, that's how you like open a presentation. You're like, and I was thinking to myself. And if you don't have something like that, there's so many other ways you can apply story to your presentation. And you guys give some really, really solid advice on how to implement that.
Yeah, I want to hear more stories in presentations. And what I really hope that folks will take away from that section is that there are several different ways to do it. It's not just like, okay, like you said, Molly, I don't need to just have this personal story that I share. I can, you know, share someone else's story. I might share a fictional story. I can do this in a micro story format. There's a quote in the book from Annette Simmons, who wrote a great book on storytelling, that talks about why story is so important in business settings, because it helps us make sense of new information. So if we're just giving people facts or data without the story, we're going to fit that into our heads and old stories that we already know. And so by telling a new story, it helps us remember this new piece of information with this new story.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Oh man, I have to like resist myself here because we could talk about this for so much longer, but it is such a funny trope. I would love to have a funny compilation of those openings, you know, because I think sometimes people think they need some kind of epiphany in Paris or something, but you can apply story in so many ways. Like it doesn't have to be this grand cinematic thing, you know?
Yeah.
I know we've just got a few minutes left and we want to get into the spice cabinet. Mikey, what do you think?
Let's do it. Because I see it's a big old pile of books behind you, Danielle.
Yeah,
you are
I know.
A presentation thinker like Molly and I. What are some of your favorite resources or books, podcasts, media, whatever that you think we should dive into next?
Yeah, there are so many great resources for public speaking. And it's something we try to point to in the book. It's also, you know, at the end of all of our programs, we give people a big PDF of like, here's all the books you should check out, all the articles.
Awesome.
I'm thinking, so I do have some behind me. I mean, there are so many great ones. So I love, for storytelling, we talk about this in the book. Nancy Duarte has written several great books on presentation and storytelling. Dan Rome, who wrote Show and Tell and does a lot of visual communication, has some great frameworks for thinking about story and presentation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the books I have here that I also love that's not a traditional public speaking book, but I talk about a lot, is Priya Parker's The Art of Gathering. Have you all read it?
No.
My wife and I started it. She finished it. I started it. Yeah. I would love to hear your take on it.
Oh, tell me more.
Yeah, it's so good. So Priya Parker writes about, you know, gathering and being, you know, facilitating any type of gathering together. So it could be a birthday, it could be a wedding, it could be a meeting. And I truly believe that when you're speaking, you are the host of that gathering in the moment. And so I think there's so many great lessons that you can learn from Priya Parker's book, from, you know, who your audience is and being really intentional about that, to sticking with the goal of your presentation. I think one of the places we reference it in the book is when doing Q&A of a presentation, and using what she calls generous authority as a way of staying on topic. I think a lot of people during Q&A, you know, get nervous and also don't want to upset people. And so there might be someone who is going on and on asking like a 10-part question, and everyone else in the audience is like, okay, when is this person going to stop? And the speaker might think, I don't want to interrupt them. That's rude.
Yeah.
But applying what Priya Parker calls generous authority would mean, you know, pausing that person and, you know, saying like, let's just focus on your first question. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that not just for yourself, but also for everyone in the room.
Everyone.
And I love this idea of generous authority as a public speaker.
Yeah. Being the guide.
So good.
That's cool. Adding to the list, we love Nancy Duarte and we love Dan Rome, but I've never heard of Priya Parker, this book. So it's why one of the reasons I love asking that question. And then in your own personal life, Danielle, do you also find yourself listening to presentation podcasts or presentation books? What are some other recommendations that you have?
Yeah, you know what's so funny? And I was thinking about this as, you know, we've been thinking about hopefully talking on more podcasts for the book, is that most of the podcasts I listen to are definitely seeding more of my personal life than professional life. And so, you know, my favorite podcast is We Can Do Hard Things with Glennon Doyle and Abby Wambach and Amanda.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure that if once I think about it, I learn a lot that I can use in presentations from that, but I haven't, I don't know if I have specific presentation podcasts I can recommend. This one, obviously, Presentation Thinking. I listen to it.
Well, thank you.
You heard it here.
But yeah, in terms of speaking resources on womentalkdesign.com, we have a lot of interviews with speakers. One of the things we really want to emphasize, again, is there's no one right way to approach speaking. And so we ran an event series called Speaker Stories, where we interviewed a speaker about how they got started, what their process is for developing presentations, how they've handled when things have gone wrong during presentations. We've recorded all of them, wrote blog posts. They're all on the Women Talk Design website. There's also a directory of 1,000 speakers, and many of them have posted talks. And I think that's another great resource to watch how other people present and, you know, see what it is that you might be inspired by and want to try out yourself.
So perfect. Cool. We have a very important question, Danielle, which is, what is your walkout song?
I think this falls under the mechanics of maybe KM framework.
Yes, this would be my mechanic.
Audio, you know, mechanics.
It depends on my context, right. I have to say.
Okay.
So one of the things that I try to do is match the theme of my walkout song to what the presentation is on. So when I talk about storytelling, Never Ending Story by, something with an L.
Who sings that?
Sing that song from the 80s. I should know. I don't have it on hand, but that one a lot. We do a workshop called Deliver with Confidence, and I don't know any of the artists. This is embarrassing. I think Selena Gomez has What's Wrong with Being Confident. So I try to find, you know, songs that talk about some of the key words with the presentation that I'm giving. I mean, a good kind of go-to is always Hall & Oates or Lizzo. I mean, Lizzo. I could walk out to any Lizzo song.
Yeah, so fun.
But I depends.
Excellent choices. Yes.
Is it someone named, I just Googled, Limahl?
Yeah.
The Never Ending Story?
Yes. It's so 80s. It's so good.
Yes,
and I feel like it's gotten a revival from, what's that TV show?
I think it's a theme. Yeah, exactly.
Though it was based on a movie, it's from a movie, but the Stranger Things, that's like bringing back all things 80s, has that song in it.
It definitely does.
I feel like it's gotten a revival recently.
Literally, yeah, something comes up with like one of the Stranger Things character in that song title.
I mean, it's so good. That's a favorite when we're talking about storytelling, to have it come on.
Thank you for sharing. I feel validated that you have some literal examples, because in Mikey and I's previous Lunch and Learns, about very specific PowerPoint slides, we'll take it to a literal sense. And problem slides, I think we had 99 Problems by Jay-Z playing, and it was similar to, we had Slide by Google Dolls for obvious purposes, you know?
Nice.
It's fun to just kind of be jokey about it. You know, it sets the tone, part of the poetics, I guess, too, right?
Yeah. We host a lot of events, and I always try to start with music, because I think that it helps people transition into the space.
And speaking of events, what is happening this year for Women Talk Design? Of course, the book's coming out. So where can people pre-order, order it? What's going on there?
We have called this year the year of Present Yourself, which is probably very fitting, as that's the name of our book. So we have several cohorts of our 8-week program that are running. One starts in a couple of weeks, and we're also launching the book. And so really focusing this year on helping give folks the tools and techniques and inspiration that they need to share their voice. So if you head to womentalkdesign.com/present-yourself, we'll lead you to the course. womentalkdesign.com/book will lead you to all things book. And we are hoping to announce pre-orders at the end of January, give and take some weeks.
All right. Yep.
But the book will launch in early 2021.
All right. End of January, look for those pre-orders. Follow Women Talk Design on social, on LinkedIn. Yeah, Danielle, can people find you anywhere? Is LinkedIn the best place to reach you?
Yeah, LinkedIn for me personally. Yeah.
Awesome. Danielle, do you have any parting shots for the presentation thinkers and aspiring speakers out there?
I think that, I wish I always try to have my notebooks with me handy to use as visuals, and I don't. We ran a Kickstarter campaign for the Present Yourself book because we self-published it, which is a whole other story. But as part of it, we made these notebooks that say, someone needs to hear what you have to say. And I think that's the reminder I want to leave folks with, is that there is someone, if not many people out there, who need to hear your story, your experience, your advice. And so I hope that you will speak and share it.
Wow. Beautiful.
Do it, y'all. Do it, Molly.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I'm off to go sign up for a cohort. So I'll see you later this year for sure.
Yeah. I can't wait. Thank you both so much.
We feel so lucky we got to chat and get a sneak preview of the book. Can't wait for the rest of it. And let's find another excuse to talk more about story science next time.
Yeah, I love that.
In the meantime, right, everyone, keep on pitching.